Hello and welcome to another episode of the American Soccer Analysis Show. I am your host, Kieran, a real media member with a media credential for MLS Cup, following in Ben's footsteps at the USL Championship. And I am joined by said Benjamin Benito Suarez Bellman and Harrison Highlife. I'm trying to think of a way to say lost the conference final with an H, but I can't. Crow. Conference finalist Crow. That's the path.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
We will talk about it, but we're actually going to start. We're going to have a bit of a longer episode today going into MLS Cup, which is like our crowning event of the year, obviously. And we'll get some because a lot of stuff has happened over the playoffs that we haven't really talked about. Agent 007, spy master himself, John Herdman is gone. There's some other managerial firings that we probably won't talk about. But the real one we did want to get to is Best 11, because Best 11 came out today. We're recording on Tuesday, December 3rd. And here's the team for you, gentlemen. Christian Kolina in goal. That lines up with our pick, right? We had Kolina as the best goalkeeper. He won goalkeeper of the year. He destroyed the stats models. It's very interesting to me. Before we move on, actually, do either of you find it surprising that by far goalkeeper is the position I think that lines up with like the analytics models in terms of voting in MLS?
There's one analytic and it's how many goals went in the net. So I don't know. I think that makes sense.
Listen, Bruce, I think I will say, I think in the area of analytics and narrative, I feel like ASA is the place that most people go to try to discern how to rate goalkeepers. And I mean, this has been the case for probably going on 6 years. We've had some pretty good people that have reached out to us and even commented to us over the years about this. And I think that goalkeeping is one of those things where you, like, ultimately it comes down to shot stopping. And when you have ASA's models and stuff that we have publicly available, I think voting kind of correlates to that. And I think it's really easy to kind of at least detail how significant an impact the goalkeeper was. It's not like always accurate, especially when we start looking at the middle part, right? We've talked about this over the past year. There's some nuance to it, but when you're talking about like the top three, four, right? I think it was pretty clear for us when we were doing our best 11 and we were looking at goalkeeper of the year. It was very, very apparent who the top keepers were this year.
Well, I would even go a step further and say that the goalkeeping stats, like just the regular stats, lend themselves more to statistical thinking than ordinary. Because you don't have to argue much with just the general fan who doesn't know anything about expected goals that the worse a team is and the worse their defense is, the better their goalkeeper has to play to, like the harder the goalkeeper's job is. And if you're going to evaluate the goalkeeper, you have to take that into account. So you're already adjusting for, okay, is this a good keeper on a bad team if they've let in a bunch of goals? Like, how many saves have they made? How many shots have they faced? Like, a lot of the time, that type of thinking is already going into it. And that's the type of thinking that underlines expected goals itself. So I think there's a real dovetail with just how you think about goalkeeping. And I think you're right. The fact that shot stopping is easily it's just obvious that that's the most important skill. Like, there's no debate about that. It just lends itself well to that.
And I think like the main stat is like very easy to follow. Like, it's goals prevented. It's goals saved above average, whatever flavor of the metric you want to call it. Like, oh, this team would have conceded 10 more goals if it was not Christian Kolina in goal. It's like, wow, 10 goals is a lot of goals. And the fact that like the ratings broadly go from negative 10 to plus 10, I think also like works with our lizard brains quite well. But no, you're right, Harrison. Like, ASA, I mean, I think our goalkeeping models are deeply flawed. Like, we don't know anything really other than where in the net the ball goes, the context of the situation, and whether it gets saved or not.
Like, we have no idea about where the keeper even is.
Yeah,
like,
we don't know. That's our data. That's our data spec. And like, yeah, we'd love StatsBomb give us free data. We'd love to have like to know those things. And it's still pretty good. But yeah, I would definitely say it's funny. Like we've made Matt Turner a lot of money, and we've made Georgie Petrovic. Like I know for a fact, for example, that Chelsea saw ASA coverage of Georgie Petrovic. Like I know that is a thing that I know. And so you look at like they spent $18 million after add-ons on him. And it's like, what is Georgie Petrovic's price if there's no ASA propaganda? Georgie's agent, give me a call. So that one was fairly easy. At the back, the team is in a 3-3-4 formation, which like we actually don't have the time to talk about how stupid the formations are. First off, 3-3-4, not a formation. Second, not the three midfielders that get picked in this team have a combined one tackle between the three of them. Third, there's
I have a suggestion. I have a suggestion.
shoot.
If the league votes this to be the best 11, the remaining, if ever whoever comes back next year has to face off against Liga MX's best 11 in that formation.
Yeah, and if you lose, your league gets a transfer ban. It's so dumb. And even the worst part is like in the ballot, when you look at the formations, it's like mostly normal. It's all normal stuff. It's like 3-5-2 and 3-4-3 and 4-3-3 and 4-2-3-1, all normal. And then there's just one 3-3-4. And you don't have to pick wingers in that. You don't have to pick defensive midfielders. You could pick three wing backs, three tens, and four strikers, and it would be a totally valid lineup. It is insane. Like, just make it a normal 4-3-3, call it DMCMAM, winger, winger, striker. And, like, okay, there's less best 11s for, like, whoever, Evander, who we're going to get to, but, like, it's a real team. The defenders, Steven Moreira, Jordi Alba, and Yaimar. I think Steven Moreira was in our best 11 across the board. I think Yaimar was there or thereabouts. I don't think he made our final ballot.
He did not, no.
I believe it was Miles Robinson and Steven Moreira. Walker Zimmerman might have been there or thereabouts. I should probably actually just look that up. Ben, what are your thoughts on that one? Jordi Alba is the one who stands out to me as like maybe not one that we had.
Yeah, I don't think we had him, and I forget who we had for our for. I mean, Bernadeschi was on the right. I
I'm
forget
gonna
who,
look it
yeah.
up while
But
you
like
cover.
it might have been Alba. I don't know. I feel like he didn't pop as much on goals added as you would have expected given the other players around him and stuff. But I don't know.
So
It's fine. I kind of expect this from the voting. Go for it.
here's our back four in a four a real functional 4-3-3. Federico Bernardeschi, right back, who was listed as a forward on the official ballot. Walker Zimmerman and Miles Robinson, center backs. Luca Orellano at left back, who was listed as a midfielder on the formal ballot.
Which is fair considering how much he ended up playing.
For sure. I think it's one of those things where like we use actual soccer positions and they use like line by line positions. So it's a little bit. I also believe the teams pick what position you are put forward in. So first, these teams are all idiots. Say your wingers are playing fullback and you'll get best 11 every time. But then again, maybe they put them as forwards to save on the contract bonuses of best 11. Sneaky, sneaky. Any like gripes about that? Like other than Alba, who is like has some messy base clout there, like Harrison Jaimar had a great year. Agree, disagree?
He had a fine year. I don't know if it's quite best 11. I definitely thought that he kind of took a step back, and with where Seattle's at, kind of looking at, what they can afford going forward, I think that there's some questions as to whether or not he's going to continue to be that best 11-ish, in that picture. But I don't think it's crazy. I think that there's probably some better center backs over him, but no, I don't think it's crazy.
There's Jeremiah Ocean from Sound at Heart tweeted like or blue skied that I refuse to say skeeted. We're not doing that. Posted that it's interesting that Yaimar got best 11 but wasn't a Defender of the Year finalist, and that he suspected there was some Jackson Reagan vote splitting, which I think is very likely. I would say that's I think very a very real thing.
Here's the thing, though. I don't think either one of them were very were like Yaimar definitely was solid. He had some pain points at certain points of the year, and towards the back end of the run, he had a great second half. Had a great second half. But Jackson Reagan just really took a step back holistically this year. And it surprises me that anyone would have voted for him for Defensive Player of the Year. It's very possible. I don't think that's the case, but I don't know. I can't say. I think that that's probably a good theory. I think Jeremiah is probably on par with that theory in terms of how it splits the vote. And we can talk about that with other things here coming up. But I don't know. I have head scratcher moments there.
I wish MLS would release the ballots. Like, don't you don't even have to say like this is who people voted for.
Sure.
Like, I don't think you have to put whatever reporter from Minnesota on blast for putting like Oluwaseyi in best 11 or something. Like, I don't think you have to do that. But like, I do think like who got however many votes should be public.
Yeah, and they
Moving
do
on
it for the
to.
finalists. They should do it for the other awards. They should do it for, I mean, they just need to revamp the whole 11. And I'm with the whole NBA. Like, you need multiple 11s. It's the only right way to
Well,
represent your league.
in a league of 30 teams,
30
like
teams.
how you're gonna pick 11 out of like almost 900 players. And if you do multiple teams, you can put real positions and not this BS 3-3-4 flying V Mighty Ducks BS. In midfield, this is to me the most egregious selection. Other than the overall shape of the team. Actually, I think Jordi Alba is probably more egregious than this. We are 2 for 3 on this one. Ricky Puig and Luciano Acosta find their way into the midfield three. But instead of being joined by Cole Bassett from the ASA ballot, they are joined by Evander. Harrison, I cede the floor to you because you were very spirited in your opinions of Evander. I don't think this is a. I don't think he should be in this. I think it's. We're going to talk about MVP because he's an MVP finalist. I don't think he should be even close to an MVP finalist. I think he's significantly worse than both Puig and Acosta as a best 11 candidate. I do wonder, by the way, looking at the order of the graphic, if they did the order of the graphic by how many votes they got. Because like surely you would put Jordi Alba as the left of the three defensively, not the middle of the three defensively, which is interesting to me if you were making the graphic. Regardless, Harrison, let us know how you feel about Evander, best 11, and MVP.
Well, like, look, what a 100%, like the finalist thing, like I'm sure we'll probably cover that in a second. And that just like that fried my brain last night, and I got really heated in like our DM, our group chat. I kind of came unglued, and I'll totally own up to that. I was in my emotions, I was in my feels, but realistically, like there's probably five or six wingers, and I'll even say, even on his own team, Jonathan Rodriguez probably brought about the same amount of value that Evander said. And I know everybody will look at goals and be like, okay, taking out the bushwhacked stats that MLS does with these inflated secondary assists, which are mind-boggling that they continue to allow that to happen. But setting that aside and just saying, okay, Stats Bomb FBref says 15 goals, 15 assists, that's what it is. All right, we'll just say that he's still probably at best the third best winger, maybe in the Western Conference. Like, maybe even he's in the top 10 of attacking players in the Western Conference. Like, you even look at his points added or expected points added, which is like how many points he brings the Timbers. He's not even in the top 10 or in the top 15. You can't tell me that this guy is somebody that it has brought so much value and he's why they're in the playoffs. Like, yes, he scored a lot of goals. Yes, he's had some key moments. I even brought up, I think last night, I thought Rusniak brought more value to the Sounders than what Evander does to Portland, just simply because of the way Evander plays, sometimes extremely selfishly, extremely one-sided, extremely direct, and he allows that formation to become lopsided, and he allows Portland to be exposed to counterattacks. That's something that, as much as I get frustrated with Rusniak, and as much as sometimes I wish he was a little bit more silkier and a little bit more keen on where he distributes and how he develops the forward progression, he rarely does he allow the Sounders to become out of shape for their defensive structure when it comes to a counterattack or ceding possession. Evander just frustrates me on so many different levels. Brilliant player, and I wouldn't take that away from him. I'm not. I know there would be some people that are misinterpreting this. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he has a lot of promise. Assuming he stays with Portland after all the things that are being said and done. But obviously, like, he's immensely talented. He's a difference maker on the field. I just have a problem even seeing him in the top 10 of attackers in the Western Conference, let alone in an MLS best 11.
Ben, I think you and I were like a little bit less down on Evander. Like 15 goals, 15 assists is real. And I don't want to give Mr. Evander too much airtime after he disrespectfully waved off Phil Neville. Duh, how could you possibly accept that? Interestingly, I'm looking at points added. Evander is fifth in points added. Just putting that out there.
In
X
points added.
points added, he is down fifth in
That's what it is.
actual.
Oh, and that's the difference. It's like, I mean, that's where I sort of am landing on. Like, he's talented, but you look at his goals added, I think they're like 0.12 per 96 or something. App
It's pretty
speed one.
good.
So it's good, but it's not MVP good. It's like, and it's
No.
all passing, and there are serious negatives in his play that's bringing what could be a lot more down from that level. So, like, this is he's a talented player, but he's a flawed player. And I think that difference between points added and expected points added shows how much of a how much you know how visually within the story of the game he grabbed headlines this season, but is that going to be repeatable based on what those plays actually were? Are those shots always going to come through? So we'll see. We'll see on that. But he should not have been in the top five for finalist MVPs. That was ridiculous.
No, MVP is like I think the way I worded it to you guys that I think was quite good, in my opinion, is that like of the five MVP finalists, I would say three of them are definitely top five, but one of the top three is not there at all in Ricky Pooj. And then the other two are like fringe guys that if one of them got into the top five, you're like, whatever.
Yeah.
But that there's two of them in him and Suarez, I think is unusual. Moving on from midfield, I mean the front four I think is pretty genuinely the four best attackers in the league. I think in Christian Benteke, Lionel Messi, Cucho, and Denny Bouanga, like I think that's like a reasonable. I think Gabriel our ballot was Denny Bouanga, Cucho, and Gabriel Peck. I think Gabriel Peck can probably feel a little bit hard done by to not be in that front seven.
They left him out because they gave him newcomer of the year, and so I think that was the trade-off, probably.
I wonder, I don't know. I don't know. I always wonder how like again, the way the voting process works is you pick a formation and you pick the players, but the formation is not the most voted for formation. It's the formation that gets the highest share of vote getters on the field. So like if you get 100% of the votes at your position, they will play a formation that gets you on. If you get 70%, you might not get on. But if you get 70% as a defender instead of 70% as an attacker, maybe you're more likely to get in. I wonder if he had some vote splitting with Pooj and with Paintsill. That's kind of where my head goes. But at the same time, like, if you say to me, did he have a better season than Benteke, Messi, Cucho, or Bouanga? I'm like, I don't know, I guess. Like a lot of those guys are pretty level in terms of performance. Like Messi, I think, is a little bit different because he didn't play as much and we really weighted total contribution. I don't know, Harrison, where are you at with those four?
I think you nailed it in terms of it was really easy to take a look and see what Messi brought, even though he didn't play a lot of games. I think that, you can validate some of what Suarez did and say, okay, well, he was really good. But does he end Evander? No. Well, like, pick one. And honestly, for me, I really thought Cujo was probably maybe the best all around attacker in MLS, and it's Jamie Moore and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago. I think he's the most versatile attacker, and this is why I would take him. Like, if I had a number one pick in MLS, like, he would be my number one pick because he can play winger, he can play striker, he can play underneath. He plays everywhere and he's successful. And he's so dynamic. He's what makes Columbus as good as what they are. I legitimately think he's probably the most versatile attacker in MLS, and I have a huge crush on him. So I personally push him forward, but I think Puig's underlying numbers just are unbelievable.
Ben, would you take Cucho ahead of Puig in like a league-wide draft?
Ooh, he's the closest, but I'd say no. But like he really is the closest. And I agree with Harrison. It's because he's so good all around, but Puig is just so good at dribbling and so good at passing. And if you can just get players who will get in the right positions and cover up his flaws, like we've been seeing. Like, I think he's just too good to leave on the board.
I think I would take Cucho, even though I think Puig is better, if that makes sense.
That's
Yeah, it
agreed.
makes sense.
Like
Yep.
I think my like midfield construct, my optimal midfield construction would not include Ricky Puig. But that's the best 11. We are gonna take a short break. You're gonna hear some tunes, and we'll be right back to talk MLS Cup after this. Thanks.
I came to LA to make rock and roll. Along the way I had to sell my soul. I made some good friends that make me say I really wanna be in LA.
And we're back. The Galaxy beat the Sounders 1-0. Harrison, we're gonna talk about that second. We're gonna talk about the glorious in the process of curse shedding. New York Red Bulls. The Red Bulls, this is their first ever Eastern Conference Championship win because the last time they made MLS Cup Final, they were in the Western Conference, which makes no sense at all. And yet, the Red Bulls are in the final. They played what feels like their 19th even game of the playoffs and somehow won again. And I mean, the Sounders and the Red Bulls were the two best defensive teams across the regular season. The Sounders did a pretty good job denying the Galaxy. I think the Red Bulls have a real chance here. Like they played Orlando in basically the same game that their first round of games against Columbus were, where Orlando had all of the ball. Kind of. And Harrison, you brought up a really interesting point about being surprised how much of the ball the Red Bulls had. So I'm curious, like, what was your feeling on that game watching live?
Watching it live, I kind of felt like Orlando City really had an opportunity. They had two or three really good chances in the first half that they just, man, one specific chance that just felt like it just fell into their lap. It was with Paco Torres at the top of the box. Man, he had that opportunity and just couldn't find the back of the net. And I felt like that was kind of that was like the ghost moment for Orlando. I felt like that's the one thing that they're gonna like point back to through that this whole game. And it kind of was that resounding moment. And I'm really surprised that New York really changed up. I mean, at the end, like, you see possession being 60% Orlando City and New York Red Bulls 40%, but like a third of the way through that game, you had Red Bulls with something like the reverse. I think they had 65% at like I want to say the 30th minute or something. It was crazy. It was really outlandish. So it, I mean, they got Reyes scores his goal at the to start the second half, and they just basically were, all right, we got this game. Bye. And they just kicked it to Orlando and allowed Orlando to just squabble after that. And yeah, it was impressive. It was impressive that they killed off the game the way that they did.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like it was like around the 25th minute maybe when I messaged the chat and I'm like, I think Orlando is trying to out Red Bull the Red Bulls, and then Kieran popped in and it might work. And like we literally we didn't know how it was gonna go. It got weird. And then once Reyes, you know, got his set piece chance in, you know, then it was just really, like you said, you look at the game flow and it's just all Orlando on the game flow at that point. And Red Bulls are just happy, like, you know, do whatever you need to do. Where you know how we want to play, and now the onus is on you to break us down. Like you had an interesting idea, but you didn't take your chances, and now you're behind the race. So if we all know that's going to be their game plan against LA too. The question is LA going to do that? Well, we do not have to jump to the matchup quite yet, but yeah, I mean it was a story of before the goal and after the goal, as it has been for the Red Bulls matches. And you know, against who did they play before? Against New York City, they got the two goals like early on, which changed so much of that match. Here it happened a little later, but at the end of this, it's the same story to me.
I think you're spot on. Like if you look at like the XG race charts, it's Orlando get their only really good chance of the game is the big Fico Torres chance early, which by the way, I just want to shout out, I'm not going to be able to find the Blue Sky post, but Matt Doyle wrote like a thing talking about how I think the chance is set up by Martin Ojeda, who gets played in behind. And Martin Ojeda is like 1v1-ish from an angle-ish with pressure. And somebody
And
was kind of
square the ball.
critical. Yeah, and he chose to square the ball for Facu Torres. And somebody was a little bit critical that he was like hesitant or something was the word they used. And Doyle talked about how like the XG of the Ojeda chance is something like 0.2. And by choosing to square it, he ups it to a 0.5 XG chance. And like you make that decision every time. And a few people said, like, oh, like you don't need XG to know that you should square it there. But like clearly, some people don't agree with that decision. And I think it is like incredibly cool that MLS and analytics and soccer have come far enough that like I would say Doyle is probably the largest coverer of MLS. Like is talking about that openly and accurately, I think is so cool. So my hat is tipped to my uncle Matthew Doyle.
I'm kind of curious if he actually knew what the value of those shots, because he nails the value.
Oh, it's spot on. It's spot
Yeah, and
on.
I had no idea, because I at the time I didn't have access to the live XG and whatnot. So I'm curious if he has
He must have
if that's something being streamed to him, if he
Sportech
knows.
something. I mean,
Yeah,
they've got
he's good.
the internal
Good. No,
numbers.
this that the Apple XG had it as the first chance is 0.9 and the square is negative XG.
Yeah, so
That's
this is the cutting
stupid model.
edge winning probabilities that we really need to see.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was cool. But sorry, to bring it back to what we were talking about, like after the goal, Orlando have one shot above 0.1 XG the whole game, the whole second half. And like it's just hard. It's hard to hang that way. Like, I think one of the things that I have not enjoyed about this playoffs, and I have quite enjoyed this playoffs. I think we've gotten like pretty good games. Even the games that have been like suffer ball-y have been pretty good. But a thing that I haven't really understood, and like this bit LAFC in the butt, is that like why are you trying to out suffer ball teams who want to suffer ball you? They're better at it than you are. And Orlando were like a 65% possession team against Red Bull both times this year. And this game, they're only 60% because in the first half, it's way more even because they tried to let the Red Bull do their thing. And like, it didn't really work. Like, I do not think you can play the Red Bulls and concede five of the first six shots. Like, I don't think that's a viable way to play.
No. Well, I mean, I think, you know, I feel like we always mention Doyle on the show, but like something he always talks about in extra time is like teams should just play into their ethos. Like, don't change your strategy. Like, you're trying to get good at one particular
And
thing. Why would
this.
you? And Perea has always been one to do that. He plays these really expansive possession games. I think he did it more these playoffs than he had in the past. And yet at the end, he comes back to, oh, time to go back into our shell for some reason. It didn't seem like the right choice to me.
And the difference between something like that versus someone like Seattle, who like Seattle went back three the majority of the playoffs after not playing a back three most of the year, is that like they had guys who had done it before and they had done it enough in the season that like it was a legitimate arrow in their quiver. Like Greg Vanney's Toronto FC wins the MLS Cup final going to a surprise diamond after playing a back three the whole year. And everybody's like, oh, it was like a big change. But like, actually, they'd done a diamond in big games a lot to give them the extra player inside. And so I think, like, when we're talking about changing, it's not just shape. And like, I realize now I said this 3-5-2 thing, but like, they only played a 3-5-2 like once the whole year. But they did a lot of stuff with like, new who left back becomes a left center back. It is what it is.
Absolutely.
But I just think like making those decisions was like a tactical blunder from Orlando City to like not just say, okay, actually we're gonna go the New York City route, who, as much as we were critical of them, like they concede the first two goals, like they actually did absolutely ratchet, they did a significantly better job of ratcheting up the pressure than Orlando did. And that's the Red Bulls heading into the final. Now, Harrison, I'm curious where you're at with this team against this Galaxy team who we're going to talk about, like who are now obviously like looming over all of this, are missing their best player. Do you play a little bit, or do you just keep suffer, suffer, suffer ball in your way?
That's a little hard. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I look at what they're able to do against Seattle, and as much as everybody can say, well, they kept Seattle scoreless, right? They did have the better chances on the day, right? I probably wouldn't have started Marco Reus. Like I thought Marky Delgado kind of came in and completely changed the game. That being said, LA Galaxy still had a bunch of really good chances in that first half, and Marco Reus was part of that. Everybody's kind of clamoring for Diego Fagundes to be that guy that steps in. I feel like putting Marco Reus up there, putting Marky Delgado up there, I feel like that makes a lot of sense to me. And I feel like Reus allows you to do a lot of the similar things that you did already. I don't know if that's necessarily how they'll go about it. If they go about it with Diego Fagundes, he has some of those characteristics, I suppose. But LA Galaxy had some really great moments without Puig this past year. And I know that a lot of people, us especially, want to put Puig up on a pedestal after the dynamic season that he's had, after the great playoffs that he's had. He also kind of started off the season a little bit rough, and how he ended last year was a little rough, right? He's a great player. He's maybe the best player in MLS, but he also has some defects. And Greg Vanney found ways to win without him in the middle of the season, and I think Greg Vanney's a great coach, and he can probably put together a team that has those attacking riches to put up some goals. I think the Red Bulls might be a better attacking team than Seattle, and I think they're a better counter team than Seattle. I think they have a better transition, because
They
Seattle
play
doesn't want.
faster. Seattle doesn't play fast.
Yeah, they don't
They're
want
not
to,
this
right?
year.
That's
Yeah,
not
exactly.
part of their core competencies, or game styles, or whatever the you youth game tactical people are calling it these days. But their game model, it's not. Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. I think LA Galaxy have their work cut out for them. I don't think this is going to be a simple game. I think there's going to be more than a couple goals scored.
Interesting. Let's talk about the Galaxy. The Galaxy take off 1-0 against Seattle. It was one of their most like stodgy attacking performances of the year. They started Marco Royce, who Greg Vanney confirmed afterwards was playing injured. He trained the latter part of the week, said he was good to go after 15 minutes. He's like, I can't. I'm not there. Kind of labored to halftime, but it was very ineffective. And Mark Delgado comes on and wins the high regain that goes to Ricky Pooj for the goal. I thought was a much more effective player in terms of allowing the Galaxy to defend much higher, where they defended astonishingly deep in the first half. And ultimately, like, the attacking talent was really the differentiator between the two, where like Jovljic gets a half chance under the edge of the box and just rips it in what was a kind of stinky goalkeeping performance from Stefan Fry, at least on that chance, anyways. Ricky Pooj plays the assist with a torn ACL, which is crazy to me. Greg Vanney confirmed today that it is a completely torn ACL that he played 30 minutes on, which is insane.
That's so crazy.
I've told, I think, I can't, I don't know if I've told this story on the pod before, just to you guys, but when I was playing at the national championship in college, we played a team from New Brunswick, and their captain was this like massive English center back. And at the start of extra time, he went up for a header, landed awkwardly, and tore his ACL and his MCL. And it's like -5 degrees Celsius, like it's cold and it's snowing and it's horrible. And he goes over to the sideline and they tape his knee up and he finishes the game. He takes a penalty in the shootout, scores his penalty, and then sits down at halftime or at halfway after he takes the penalty and does not move. He's like, if there's a second one, it's over. Like, I cannot. And he played about half an hour with a torn ACL MCL, but it was like clear. Like, the guy could not move. And after the game, I saw him in the hotel and I was like, how? I was like, are you like, what's the deal? Like, is it torn? And he's like, oh yeah. He goes, I can't walk. And like, my hamstring's probably toast too, because your hamstrings, when you tear your ACL, it's called hamstring guarding. Your hamstring does the job of your ACL. And what is particularly interesting to me is there is like a physio test you do. It's called the Lachman test. And if you go back and watch the clip when he gets treatment from the Roldan brother on the sideline, Roldan does the
Caesar.
Lachman test. Yes, Cesar Roldan does the Lachman test to see. So they knew he had a torn ACL and were like, you're not going to play after this anyways. What's the point of taking you off? So kudos to Ricky Pooj, because like, that is ballsy.
What a warrior, man. Jeez. That's insane.
I have no real soccer takeaways from this game. Like, Seattle
I want to
existed.
go back to I want to go I don't think anyone else has acknowledged the fact that LA Galaxy knew he tore that. Like, him coming off the field crying, like, I thought it was a cool moment. Like, he had that hug and everything with Greg Vanney and everything,
Yeah.
and you could tell he was like that there was something going on, and you chalk it up to emotion and stuff. Holy shit. Like, the idea that they knew it and they allowed him to gut it out,
Like,
that's
won them the game.
Yeah,
And
and he
yeah, and one of
won.
the
Like, I don't think they
listen,
score that goal if it's not Pooj making
listen,
that pass.
if you didn't know, you wouldn't know.
No. I
Like,
knew he
if
was
they
hurt. Like, you could tell he was limping and was like bothered with his knee. I was worried
Oh
about it,
yeah,
but I wouldn't have thought he had torn
he
it.
was doing the like flex thing with your knee over and over. But like, if Vanny had played coy this whole, if they had not announced it, right? Like, they had done an LA Clippers and been like, oh, he's day to day, like Kawhi Leonard. And they had not said anything. Would any of us be sitting here like, oh, I don't know if he's going to play the final? Nobody was like, oh, he's that injured. Nobody. So to me, that is like one of the all-time gutsy MLS performances from like the ultimate flair and panache guy. Like, you'd expect that from like Bedoya or
Well, it's like
Dax. Like Dax with his knee held together by duct tape and spit. And it's like, no, it's
what
Ricky Pooj.
When we were talking about Evander, I was thinking of him as like, he's a luxury player. Like, he wasn't really key to anything the Timbers did. Like, he's just skill flair. He's a game breaker when you want to break the
No,
game
Evander
every so
tears his
often.
ACL. That guy's
No way. But yeah,
sub-symbol
I
right over.
thought the first two seasons Pooj was here, that was I thought he was the ultimate luxury player and it was never going to work. And then Vanny flips the model to just work with him and cover up his things and clear, and then he plays like a quarter of a game with no ligaments in his knee. So
Look,
obviously not a luxury player. I take it back, Ricky.
I think one of the like super, 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 super underrated things about Greg Vanney is that like he has been able to construct like competent, if unspectacular, defensive ideas with like legitimately the laziest defensive talent.
No, not good.
Like
Getting absolutely
Giovinco,
getting
my God.
by
Yeah,
Georgie.
like TFC, so like the Galaxy are the 10th worst defense in the league by XGA, but they're by far the most productive XG4. So like it comes out in the wash, and like his Toronto FC team with Giovinco and Altidore, not just Giovinco and Altidore that you always had to play to up front, and a like kind of washed physically Michael Bradley, like the guy has like is pretty good at getting stars to buy in, I will say. I think that's like a legitimate strength of his. Nonetheless, let's shift to the final. Obviously, there's no Ricky Pooj, who is not the MVP somehow. Ben, how would you? Is it just you start Marky Delgado and Marco Reus? Is it you go the full destroyer midfield and go Cerio, Delgado, Brugman? How would you approach this game?
This is a really tough question because I think whichever way you like, whatever you choose, you have to go all in on it. So I don't hate the idea of going destroyer midfield, but it kind of violates what I said earlier of you shouldn't depart too much from what got you there. I haven't looked back at the games where they didn't play with Pooj, and I'm curious what those possession figures were like. Like, what was their game? Were they as possession based? Like, do they have someone who's ball, as ball dominant as Ricky is when Ricky's not on the field? You know, is that Fagundes? Because that was never really Fagundes's game, even when he wasn't like the super sub. I don't know if you like Royce was probably going to be the closest one for one swap you can do, and I think he's like. I think he's got a knock. Like, I think that's why they pulled him early from the
Correct.
game. So I would not trust him for a start. I would use him for a sub. So I think at that point, I think you have to stick with your guns a bit. So I think I'd do Surio. I think I'd do Delgado, and I might do Fagundes and see if he's willing to play more centrally, and roll with that.
So Ricky Pooj had like a pretty massively positive XG on off. Their XG differential was like half an expected goal better when he played than when he didn't. And it's only 690s that he didn't play. I'm trying to actually track down like exactly what games those are. So Harrison, I'm gonna flip it to you. I do think that's like a legitimate question if like Royce can't go. Kim McCauley has the thing that like if you have a player who is a fitness doubt, you should start them because if they have to come off, you only have to sub them once. And I think with Royce, like that's probably the direction I would go, is that I would start him and like you play him until he can't go. And if he can get to halftime, great. And if he's fine, then amazing. But
Yeah,
then like
I
if
didn't know
you
that about Royce. I actually had no idea that he was injured or that he seemed to be
Yeah.
not up to fitness.
I don't know if he's a doubt for the final, but Vanny did say that was why he came off in the conference final. So Harrison, what's your thing that you're looking for with the Galaxy side of this, of like, oh, they're going to be fine today, or like you're going to be a little bit worried after the first 15 minutes of the game?
First 15 minutes is going to be transition. The Red Bulls are simply the best and most dominant team when it comes to stopping dribbles by possession, right? Dribbling up the field and having those 1v1 moments to where you're pushing possession upwards through. Now, you can go over top of them, and that's largely been successful at times, but they're just so dominant. Edelman especially is so dominant in tracking down those balls. That entire defense is so coordinated and structured to eliminate those quick dribbles in transition. They really cut off those things and make you force those passes up the field. I think that part of that is that they're very strong aerially from a defensive perspective, and so getting somebody to make some passes in to where you have that back line with either Sean Nealis or Andres Reyes that are able to just basically head those balls away and to try to push either push those transitionary balls back into the midfield or even allow that attack to have to reset. I think that's kind of how they're going to be going about it. So if LA is not able to get those balls and push that back line and not able to get that transitionary attack going, that's going to set off some alarm bells for me because LA is terrible in transition backwards, like defensive transition. This is they are a slow defense. They are a slow defense. We watched this last week with Yamane, like just having trouble with keeping up
Oh,
with Georgie. Like
the Yamane Georgie like duel. I think at one point in the Discord I said that Georgie had Yamane on a Bichotan, the like charcoal grill, the Japanese
you had the
charcoal
best
grill.
call. Like, okay, you sent that, and that like had me rolling for a couple minutes. Like, I was actually laughing on my sofa at that. It just, yeah, he got a washing machine for sure at a couple of different occasions, and
I think in general, though, I was actually a little bit impressed with the Galaxy's transition defending against Seattle because Seattle are a legitimately quite good transition team.
they
And
can be.
they can be, and they're certainly looking to play that way. And I don't think, other than there were like two Georgie ones that like didn't end up turning into anything, there was like a nasty free kick on the edge of the box. And there was like the nice Pedro de la Vega moment where he slips Obed and Obed has like a nasty touch that ends up in a shot that gets blocked. Aside from that, I thought they actually defended transitions very well against the team who was only looking to transition.
I have
Now,
I before you go on, you say now and park it for just a second. Keep that thought.
I'm parked.
But I want to know how worried were you with how much trash you've levied on De La Vega with that moment where they
Not at
went
all.
where he pulled, dude? Like, come on! Like,
It was an
even I like
listen.
sat up and was like, "Oh, am I
Listen.
wrong? Oh,
Put
am I
it this
wrong
way.
for a moment?"
Put it this way. He has this lovely dribble and pass, and it still requires Obed to absolutely undress the center back with like a ridiculous croqueta touch, and the shot still gets blocked. Like, it's really not that great a moment. It's a pretty moment. I actually thought De La Vega was okay. I thought he did his job very admirably in that match. I thought he defended very well. I thought he was semi-dangerous in transition. Like, I
You liked him better
withhold.
than I did, I think, on the day. But I'm sorry. Go ahead and continue on to your thought. You're
So
saying.
my now but is that like the Red Bulls transition functionally is very different from Seattle's is very much like wide transitions to play Morris in behind, and Morris is the only depth threatener. Whereas for the Red Bulls, both Morgan and Van Zier can pop off the front and threaten depth. Forsberg can knit things between lines and run into the box. I thought Forsberg looked ultra cooked against Orlando physically. He looked dead against Orlando. That's my thing that I'm looking for the most. Is first 20 minutes of the game, how many times do Van Zier and Morgan get in behind? And how many touches does Forsberg get? Like in behind the midfield, but in front of the back line. I used to work with a coach, this guy, Yanis Salisidis, who won Coach of the Year in League One this year. And he used to have this metric called play-ups. And it was you get the ball facing forward in front of or behind the back line. So like pass all the midfielders either in front of or behind the back line. That was his like self-tracked metric. I will be very curious to see how many play-ups the Red Bulls get, because I think if they can get behind Surio or around Surio with 3v, and if you can ISO that middle triangle of Van Zier, Forsbergen, and Lewis Morgan, like, I think there's real danger there. And on the flip side, like, I think the thing that stood out for the most in terms of takeaways from the Seattle Galaxy game, Ben, I wonder how you feel about this, given that, like, Colorado also went to a back three in their do or die moment, is, like, I actually thought Seattle did an excellent job of nullifying Peckin Paintsil, who, like, I thought it was one of Paintsil's worst games of the season. He basically did nothing the whole game.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think the shouting my shout about the second Colorado match being a little underrated and how much more effective they were, granted on the road at altitude, how much more effective they were at limiting the Galaxy's effectiveness with the possession. They certainly didn't have the ball. They still gave the Galaxy all of the ball, but it was back and forth all night, and until like the 80th, Paintsil broke the game open with one of his runs and like looping shots, and that he got another one of those against Minnesota. I agree with you. I don't think he was present at all against Seattle. But like that game, going to the back three was much more effective. The Red Bulls have been rolling with this back three for a while now and are going to be very effective at that. Like they have been playing this type of style against this type of style that the Galaxy are more acquainted with. Again, I don't know how much they're going to lean into it this time now that their main talisman is not going to be able to play. So it's going to be interesting. The thing I'm going to be looking forward to the most, though, I think, Harrison, you're right, is it's going to be looking at the transition moments. Are they going to be able to score? And they have to do it soon. Like that's my key for the victory for the Red Bulls, is they will want to score within the first 25 minutes. And if they can, they're going to like their chances, and they might get another sort of on the break again. Like they want the game to look exactly like it looked against New York City. That's what they're hoping for, and I think it could happen. But it's going to be key, like you're saying, Kieran, it's going to be key on the front three being able to combine, being able to overload up the middle and sort of expose when they're too far up. That's going to be when the Red Bulls are going to want to pounce.
So I kind of looked into this Puig missing moments. Four starts that he didn't play. He played 28 90s, so there's 2 90s of subbed off minutes, but four games he did not play at all. A home win versus SKC, 4-2, 3.2 to 2.6 XG. A 2-0 home win against NYCFC, 1.7 to 0.8. A 1-0 away win over RSL, 0.8 to 1.0. And a 2-1 away loss to St. Louis, 0.7 to 0.7. That's two
Whoa.
okay games at home, two not great games away. This game is at home.
Was the RSL game away or home?
That was away.
Away. And they won 1-0 at Rio Tinto.
I mean, that's kind of impressive.
That is kind of impressive,
But they did
but
struggle ball it, it wasn't it was they weren't playing the
yeah,
game in
it
that.
wasn't
So
exactly a
it seems like their style seems to get a little bit disrupted without Puig just on the ball all the time, all over the field. That's good. Like this is a it's a they're great players, but they've barely played this way all year without him just controlling everything.
I could not believe how many touches he got on his own in the first half. 2 minutes into the, I was tracking this because I said my prediction for the game is that he would break the touch record. And I have no idea what the touch record is. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I have no idea. The first 2 minutes of the game was how long they had the ball, okay, before the Sounders got a touch. He had 10 passes. 10 passes in the first 2 minutes. And it was just like, it was literally him just running around the field, being like, I'm going to pass it to you. And then you give it back. And then I'm going to pass it to you. And then you give it back. And I'm just going to, like, here's 19 million touches. And Vanny said at halftime, like, can you not do this anymore? Like he said on TV, like, he needs to stay out more. I'm going to leave you with one last stat before I ask for your predictions. By set piece expected goal difference, the Red Bulls have been one of the best teams consistently in MLS. Greg Vanney teams, and particularly the Galaxy this year, bottom five set piece expected goal difference against. That is where the game goes for me. And that is why I'm going to ask for your picks. And I'm going to start with mine. The Red Bulls are going to take it. The Galaxy are going to be too discombobulated without Pooge. The Red Bulls are going to win off of a set piece goal 1-0. And the Galaxy fans will cry in Carson. Harrison, give me your pick.
No, I'm right there with you, dude. This is one of the things, the set piece things was one of the reasons why I felt like they had a head up on Orlando, even though that they were going to be playing in Orlando. I feel the same way about LA, man. They look, whether it's Reyes or it's Sean Nealis, like both of them are very good at headers. I'm with you. I think that set pieces are in their favor. I'm going with Red Bulls.
Yeah, I'm going with Red Bulls. I think it'll be 2-1. I think they'll score early. I think they'll get another, and then I think Galaxy get a consolation goal after the 70th minute. But yeah, I think this is Red Bulls, and I don't think I'd feel this way if Pooge hadn't done his knee.
No, I would for
I think
sure
if
be
Pooge were on the
picking.
field, I'd be picking the Galaxy.
So would I. Well, I'm going to be at MLS Cup. So if you're a listener and you're going to be there, I'll be there. Shoot me a blue sky message or a tweet or something. Come say hi. I'm very excited. I think it's going to be very fun. And I'll tell you this, we'll do a post championship episode. We'll talk about the final. We'll talk about some random stuff. And then it's the off season. And let me tell you, friends, we got some fun plans for the off season. Anyways, if you want to support the show, if you want to support ASA, those ever rising server costs, there's one way to do it. Check out the ASA patron Discord. There's one tier. It's $5 a month. This playoffs, I feel like I've been very active in there, a lot of conversations. There's people get in there getting roasted by their students who are being NYCFC supporters. There's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun while I was in Vegas in the sports book, just like following all the banter in there. And it's a great time, and it goes to a good cause, which is keeping the site you know and love up and running. Anyways, that's all from us. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Harrison. Bye bye for now. And as always, enjoy the soccer.